Okay, here we go. Another episode celebrating. This is probably the 24th episode I've recorded. So there's like, I don't know, 3 or 4 hours of addiction and redemption that you could listen to, like a saga if you really wanted to. And again, I'm your host, Dave Keenest. This is brought to you by Keenest Coaching. This is my third podcast recording in a row. And that's how I do it. I just binge record them. And this is how most podcasters do it. They just binge record their episodes. The secrets of podcasters revealed. But you know, it's the Friday after Thanksgiving. And I talked about in the couple episodes ago how I was going to tell this terrible story about how I ruined Thanksgiving in 2006. But I'm not to that point in the story yet. So this is just an adventure story that I'm going to tell. So the story I'm about to tell happened about a month after I got out of my first treatment center. So I got out of treatment. I mentioned in the last episode how hopeless I was and how dark that time in my life was. And for the record, I actually didn't pawn that ring, that grandmother's wedding ring. I figured out another scam, which I'm going to talk about in this episode. But I was... So my point is that, like, I'm completely hopeless, and I get addicted immediately. Just, I get re-addicted immediately. Within 3 or 4 days, I'm just completely addicted. All that treatment, all that rehab just went down the drain. All those things that they told us to do, didn't do them, and now it's too late. Now I'm just back in square one. It's actually gotten worse. Like, I'm actually worse than I was, well, much worse than I was before I went in. Because the disease, it just continues to progress. It just gets worse and worse and worse and worse and worse. I'm convinced that if I started drinking now, that within 45 minutes, I would be on my way to being in worse shape than I was 11 years ago. That's how serious this shit is. And I'm going to share a story. There was this night, about a month after I got out of rehab, I'm sitting in my parents' basement, I'm drinking wine. And the wine is getting me drunk, and me getting drunk is making me want dope a lot worse. And a lot more, and it's making these craving feelings get much worse. I hadn't used that day, and I really wanted to, and I don't know the reason why, or maybe I'd used a little bit in the morning, and by now it was night, but I got this cockamamie idea to take this credit card, this, like, last remaining credit card that I had, and go to the White Hen Pantry in Glen Ellyn and purchase a carton of cigarettes. Newports. And what I would do is I would take that carton of cigarettes, those Newports, they're probably Newport 100s, and I would take them down to the city and I would trade them for heroin. This was my plan. I figured I'd find some little gangbanger, I'd trade him for heroin. And I would have to find somebody who would be willing to do that, but I figured I could pull it off. And I don't know, I'm really not a good hustler. I mean, I'm just not that street smart in general. I'm like, I don't have the gift of hustle. Some people just have the gift of hustle. I don't. I'm just kind of dim-witted in that regard. But I concocted this idea, and it's late at night. It's like probably midnight, and I concocted this idea. And I actually had, I think I mentioned several episodes ago that I saved my, that I sold my truck, but thinking now, I actually still had my truck because I remember very specifically using my truck that night to drive. So whatever, it's all a blur, like I mentioned, but I did sell my truck eventually. But anyway, I went to the White Hen Pantry and I bought a carton of cigarettes, which is like 70, 80 bucks or 60, 70 bucks, something like that. And I drive to the West Side and I get off at Cicero, my usual spot, and I find this kid and I'm like, yo, man, you want to do a trade? And he's like, sure, man, like I'll trade you. So he points me to this, you know, he says, go that way and take a right and then take a left and there's an alleyway and wait for me in that alleyway. So I'm like, all right. So I'm driving like to meet this kid, and now mind you, I'm like 3 or 4 blocks away from the main thoroughfare, from the 290 Eisenhower Expressway at this point. And I got to the alley, and I actually had the sense to back into the alley so that the front of my truck was pointing out. But he meets me over there, and he comes up to my car, and he brings me 2 bags of dope, and I gave him, like, I think 5 packs of cigarettes. So he's actually making a deal because it's like 10 bags. It's like, you know, $5 for a pack of cigarettes on the street. And so he's getting 50 and he's giving me like 20 worth, right? And he knows it. He knows he can go and sell those for $5 or $6 or $7 a pack and make a profit. And that's what he's thinking. And I know he can do that. So this, we're kind of dealing. And he goes and he brings me this stuff and I open it up immediately and I snort it and I can tell it's good. So I'm like, sweet. So I'm like, all right, man, go get me another two bags and I'll give you the rest of the cigarettes. He's like, all right. So I'm like starting to sort of drift off, right? I'm starting to feel this stuff. And all of a sudden I look up and I'm surrounded by like 6, 7, 8 young black teenagers. And it's like 12 or 1 in the morning in the ghetto in a place I do not belong. And they're surrounding me. They've surrounded my car. And one of them says, yo, man, give up the Newports. And I was like, all right, you know, I'm being very lackadaisical with them. I'm not really respecting them. And he goes, yo, man, give up the Newports. And I'm like, all right. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, one of them punches me through the car window. Now, the car window is open. It's not like he shattered the glass. But he punches me through the car window. And then I realize in that instant that my life is in fucking danger. And it just all of a sudden snaps me back to reality. So what I do is I hit the gas and I just go plowing through them. And they're kind of chasing me. And I'm hauling ass down the street, and I barely get to the end of this one street, and I take a right, and my car then runs out of gas with this gang of teenagers chasing me. So I get out of the car, I open the door, and I just start running, because I know where the expressway is, and I can see the expressway in front of me, but there's like a fence, and then the fence is like, on the other side of the fence, there's an embankment. And so I grab the fence, and I jump the fence, and I clear the fence, and I roll down the embankment, and I land on the side of the Eisenhower Expressway, and like gasoline and broken glass, and there's like pieces of tires, and you know, just like piss, and whatever else is on the side of the expressway, and I'm just running down the side of the Eisenhower Expressway as fast as I possibly can. And then all of the sudden, as I'm running, those two bags of dope that I snorted hit me, and everything just goes into slow motion, and all of a sudden the cars just start like whizzing by me and leaving like these bright red ribbons on the sides of, you know, the road. And I'm surrounded in them in these like red ribbons, and it's just like this fantasy type of world that I'm in. And I start running a lot slower, and then I just start walking. And as I slow down and start walking, this dude pulls up, this car pulls up, and this guy rolls his window down and he goes, hey man, what you doing? My name's Kelly. And I was like, dude, these guys try to kill me, motherfucker. And he goes, it's cool, dog. You're with me. Get in. So I got in the car with this dude, Kelly. And he pulls back into the Eisenhower. And I tell him I got a credit card. I'm like, you take me back to the ghetto and I'll sport. You know, we can do the fill-ups, because he's way more of a hustler than me. I'm like, you can do the fill-ups, I'll sport. So we go back into the west side. And he knows everybody there, so he just starts flagging people down, going, yo, I got a gas card, yo, I got a gas card. And so they would have me fill up their cars for like 40 or 50 bucks, and they would give us 20 in cash, and we'd take that 20 in cash, and we would go and buy drugs. And we were doing dope and crack that night, so we're splurging. And this guy's just telling me that if I'm with him, I'm okay. For whatever reason, I trusted this guy. And I don't know if this guy was like an angel or the devil or a saint or a savior or what he was for me that night, but I held him in high regard for whatever reason. And I believe that in some capacity, he actually cared for me. I believe he saw the light in me. He saw some sort of light. So I didn't think that he was going to do anything crazy with me, like try to kill me or kidnap me or extort me or anything. But we went driving around the hood all that night and filling up people's cars, and it was a trip. It was a trip that this actually happened to me, that this event transpired in my life. You know, and I remember we're at this gas station, and I have this line in this book that I've been writing, if I ever finish it, that says, the line between cops, criminals, liars, lawyers, and thieves seemed to cross, and I questioned who was who. Or no, that's not it. The line between cops, criminals, liars, lawyers, and thieves got blurry, and I questioned who was who. And that was how I felt this night, because there were police down there, and like we were at a gas station, and it was like some of the cops knew some of the gangsters that were in the gas station, and everyone was together in this thing, and there was this interconnectedness of all, of the everything, and I actually got a glimpse into it that night. I was a part of the all in this way that I never anticipated that I could be, you know? And it was a trip. And the night transpired, and it kept going, and we met this hooker around dawn. This hooker named, I can't even remember her name, Ashley or something. There's a whole other story of with another hooker I knew named Boo that I totally forgot about until just now. That was like happened way back like last summer in the episodes, but whatever. Hookers aren't my thing, fortunately. I'm not one of those hooker guys. A lot of guys have problems with hookers. Hookers have never been my thing, meaning having sex with them. I've been friends with a few here and there over the years, but friends with several ex-prostitutes in recovery. You'll get to know several. You'll get to know a few here and there. But anyway. We met this hooker, and we go back to her house. Now, this is not safe. Going into someone's private residence in a neighborhood that is ridden with crime, basically with a target, with a sign on my forehead that says, I'm a target, I'm a stupid white boy from the suburbs, please rob me, right? Not a smart thing. But we went into this hooker's apartment, and she took a hit of this crack and then stripped naked and like bent over in front of me. And she's like telling me to spank her. So I'm like spanking her as the sun rises over the west side of Chicago. And it's just like, what the fuck? I mean, this was my life. This happened to me. And those gangsters the night before, they could have killed me. They would have beat me and left me for dead if they'd have caught me. And my car ran out of gas. What was up with that? And I still got away, only to be rescued by this man named Kelly, who takes me right back into hell with him. And this is like, you know, it's like Dante's Inferno. I'm like dancing around in this other dimension of hell. It's just like, how did this happen? How did all of this happen? And it was only going to get worse. So thanks again for tuning in. It's been really amazing sharing these stories with you all, and I'm really honored that you've been listening. I'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.